Waipa, Yama, Wumanjeka, and welcome to Earth Matters, environmental and social justice stories from Australia and around the world. This show was recorded on Nyaluma Nyara and Nyamal land in the Pilbara region of Western Australia, in conjunction with 3CR in Naam, Melbourne, on Wurundjeri land in the Kulin Nation, and broadcast around the continent on the Community Radio Network. I'm your host, Phil Evans, and I'm so glad you could join me for the show, because today we're looking at activism on the coal, the gas base.
We want to hold the companies we work for accountable for doing things differently.
Fossil fuel companies paying the rent for the damage they've done, like both to the environment and to Aboriginal people's entire livelihood up here.
For much of my time doing activism, I've been in the progressive heartland of Naam. So today I wanted to talk to an inspiring group of people who are part of the Pilbara Climate Network. This interview took place on Nyaluma Nyara in Karratha, about 1,500 kilometres north of Borloo, Perth, on the very long West Australian coastline. And it will be well known to many listeners, probably for the wrong reasons. This is where the now infamous Burrup Hub is being extended and built. The infamy that disrupt Burrup Hub actions and subsequent battles with the WA police and the ABC has been subject to massive media attention. But all this pales into insignificance when you see firsthand the scale of industrial development occurring in the fossil fuel and fertilizer resources sector. Much is known about the struggle of the activists engaged in the direct action and civil disobedience campaigns in the cities. But what about the activists battling climate change in the local community here? Enter Chris, Fiona and Rachel from the Pilbara Climate Network.
So I came up to Karratha about 14 months ago and definitely felt in some ways that it was the belly of the beast. But I also think that, and I still do think, that living here, people are very aware of the establishment of fossil fuels here. And there are plenty of people even within the local community that have their concerns, particularly when you see the massive infrastructure projects that are there. And then you think that the implications of that for the world and how we really are at the epicenter of that. So I definitely felt to begin with that there was real prospects of local action. And I do think that whatever we do here, it has a magnified impact because we are where we are. People don't expect to hear voices from the Pilbara. So I think those voices are super important.
That was Chris, who lives in Karratha and works in social services. Fiona, who lives out in Dampier, a kind of satellite town of the much larger Karratha, introduced herself next.
And I'm a Pilbara local for 16 years. So I got into activism through Indigenous rights, looking for an environmental group to join. And there was nothing up here. I heard of nothing. I'm not on any social media, which probably doesn't help. I met Chris and I work in the mining industry. I'm not in oil and gas. So it was always a hard one to meet kindred spirits because I saw some of the things that we could be doing differently and better, but not a way to get a voice and not a way to meet people that we could come together to come up with projects and activism and whatever it takes to get the message across that, you know, it doesn't matter where you're working or living, we can always do things better.
I'm Rachel. I've been involved in climate activism since I was about 14 through a very cool conference for kids. I moved up to Karratha about 2 years ago, was helping out with a campaign called Save Our Songlines at the time. I work in conservation, so spent the day getting rid of weeds.
I went on to ask them how the Pilbara Climate Network was formed.
When I came up to Karratha, I sort of created a Facebook page of the Pilbara Climate Network, sort of to raise a flag for people to respond to. And that really did just prove the point that there are people here already doing stuff. And from that, it became, from a page, a group that met quite quickly, and people who had, you know, a local awareness of the issues. And from there, we were going strength to strength, and then sort of Palestine solidarity has really come along and taken a lot of people's attention. But there is, this group is now meeting again, and is definitely keen to kick off again with projects in Karratha.
Karratha itself is the largest town in the Pilbara. With a population of around 17,000, it is dwarfed by most East Coast regional cities. I grew up in the second largest Pilbara town, Port Hedland, just up the road from Karratha. But of course, when you talk in Pilbara distances, that means 240 kilometres. I often wonder what my life would have been like if my parents hadn't eventually moved us down to Perth. Would I still have been an activist working on climate change? Who knows? Colonised and settled to house mining workers in the 1960s, the mining industry continues to be a huge employer in Karratha and the surrounding region. And the town is home to fly-in, fly-out camps, among other mining infrastructure. This highly transient and mining industry-exposed population presents its own challenges to those working on environmental issues.
It's been a hard thing to get engagement with our network as well. To get people involved is that absolute fear, because we live right in the heart of what is a mining town. Like I mentioned, I myself work in a mining company. I don't have to, but it's very wise for me to. I let my manager know any activism that I do, and he supports whatever choices I make. But there have been people who I'm close friends with who work for the same company who have been cautioned by their leaders, because they do have a very public face in their role and they're at a quite a senior level, that if they were to participate and have their name put out there, it may jeopardise their job. So they've actually directly been told to consider their options and their choices. So I do know that there's a lot of people who would potentially be involved, but it is absolutely that fear, whether it's themselves or a spouse or a family member or a friend who works for that industry. And that's one of the hardest things to get across, is it's not about boycotting completely, having anything to do with it. I understand we all have livings to make, we all have lifestyles to lead. Really getting that drive that we want to hold the companies we work for accountable for doing things differently, and striving to meet commitments to combat climate change. And we believe we can do it from within as much as we can without. It's just really hard to get people to be brave enough to, when they're working in those industries, to stand up. But when we have done activists or protest activities out in the community, I've been rather surprised. Yes, we have been slandered by passers-by and there's rude gestures, but overwhelmingly the support that we've had from passers-by has been positive on a massive ratio in comparison, which really actually surprised me. So the support's out there. It's just getting people involved and having those discussions and involved in the network, which is rather difficult. They're just not ready to make that step.
I actually think working in PCN in the Pilbara is a real opportunity, because it sort of requires a climate movement to take on the perspectives of the people working in the sector. And there is what I think is a false dichotomy between workers in the sector and the interests of the broader community. And like I think, as Fiona said, like, I mean, everyone is connected in some way to the oil and gas industry or the gas industry in the Pilbara. And you know, what we would say is, you know, workers in the sector don't love gas. They love or appreciate the sense of security they get from working in the sector. And we would say, yes, you and your family deserve that security. In fact, everyone deserves that security. And while you might be receiving this income now in the present, this industry and what it's doing for the world's climate is putting your children's future in jeopardy, and mine and everyone else's. So if this is for our families, if this is for our kids and their kids, then that is the change that needs to be made. And in actual fact, the workers in the industry are best poised to put pressure on those companies and the government to make change, because they are at the coalface, literally. So we are always trying to shape our discussions around what are the interests of ourselves and future generations, irrespective of where you work, because we are all effectively in that same boat at the end of the day.
How can fear be calm when the storm is yet to come?
Even our gas in town doesn't come from the local gas. We have to get it shipped in like gas cylinders, which is, I think, possibly the only place in WA that doesn't have its gas directly piped from here.
What? When Rachel told me that, I couldn't believe it. According to the Australian Energy Market Operator, AEMO, there's a prediction of Western Australia having a domestic gas shortfall by 102 petajoules until 2026. This is despite the huge profits for gas producers who continue to exploit the international demand for fossil fuels, despite the, well, until recently, bipartisan support for our international obligations to cut greenhouse gas emissions under the Paris Agreement.
It's the carbon footprint, you know, put aside the use of gas in the first instance, it's being touted as the green energy. The footprint of gas alone is bad enough, but the fact that we have this whole processing and transport and purchasing line that makes us probably one of the worst users of it in the end, really.
But the Pilbara Climate Network crew did have a bold alternative vision on energy for the region.
I'd love to just see Karratha become a renewable export town rather than a non-renewable export town.
I would love for the Pilbara and Karratha to be known as the region where fossil fuels were phased out against all odds, because I do believe that the potential is here.
Look at the amount of sunlight we get here, the wind energy, the tidal energy. It is criminal that we don't use that. And I find too, a lot of the discussions that I have with people in the towns being transient, where they get their information from, and the oil and gas industries up here do a pretty good propaganda campaign, be it on radio or telephoning or being out in the community. And you can have these educated conversations with educated people who will give you statistics on why climate change is a myth, or why sustainable energy actually costs more in fossil fuels and it's going to be saving. And I have those conversations weekly from highly educated people that are working in that sector, and they're the conversations they're having in community. And it's a lot easier for people who don't want to rock the boat in oil and gas to not investigate those claims.
It requires a major shift in consciousness, but again, we're not asking people to sacrifice their own self-interest. We're asking them to act in a collective survival interest. And I do believe that that can be explained. I do believe people are rational at the end of the day.
The other kind of progress I'd like to see is the fossil fuel companies paying the rent for the damage they've done, like both to the environment and to Aboriginal people's entire livelihood up here, and also the health costs. Like, it should be fossil fuels propping up the hospitals here, because they are lacking a lot of services, including dialysis, which is particularly infecting the Indigenous communities, and people are driving to Port Hedland to get dialysis treatment. And in a town that produces such a huge profit for these companies, surely a lot more of it. They do sponsor a lot of art stuff and things that look good. Anything where they can slap their name on something, they'll do, but it's not nearly enough. And I think we all know that if they were taxed appropriately, they'd be able to fund everything we ever needed up here. And we have some of the richest people here, and there are people living way below the poverty line, and then there is homeless people up here, and this is horrible conditions to be homeless in the summer. And also the conditions at Roebourne Regional Prison are not great. There's no aircon in the men's half, so there's a lot of things that could be done that aren't being done, and it's a problem that the fossil fuel companies could be funding, and that the government could be holding them to account, and the government could be funding. There's plenty of people responsible, but no one's doing anything about it.
A state of shock, disbelief.
Striving for climate justice in the heart of the mining industry. You're listening to Fiona, Rachel and Chris from the Pilbara Climate Network. That's today on Earth Matters. If you've missed any part of today's show or you want to hear it again, then you can always catch up with a podcast available on 3cr.org.au/Earth Matters, all as one word. Or you can find us via your favourite podcasting service like Apple or Spotify. And while you're there, please leave us a review and help us to spread the word. Why? Because the Earth matters.
People here are weirdly comfortable with the amount of industry that there is, because the most popular beach up here since COVID, you have to drive through Perdaman's activities and past the little bit of rock art that they have fenced off. And like, I find it really upsetting to drive through there, and so does a lot of people.
Oh,
but
I avoid it as much as I can now. I still love that beach. It makes me want to cry.
It's heartbreaking.
It's absolutely heartbreaking.
I think some people have just managed to compartmentalise that, and it's just so normal for them to see that level of industry. There's a lot of four-wheel drive, outdoorsy activities up here. If you drive to Whitnall Bay, like, you're swimming and you can see industry all around you. You could probably swim out and touch something if you wanted.
It is important here to stop and talk about the rock art that Rachel mentioned there. The scene is hard to paint, and just thinking about it stirs a disturbing feeling in my gut. The petroglyphs, or carved rock art, dates back millennia, over 47,000 years. The awe that is the legacy of the long-standing human culture is emotional to view, and the majesty of such ancient culture amid the exponentially more ancient rocks of the Pilbara make for an experience that needs to be seen and felt firsthand to truly understand. We'll explore more about this in a future episode because the story is long and needs to be told and retold again. And it deserves the attention to detail. But the experience of this place is jolted back to the dystopian reality of now by the dull din of industrial noise. But just kilometres away, the fully visible from the protected area, is a fertiliser plant, and beyond it, a gas plant. And the sound of massive earthworking operations that Rachel mentioned, making room for the Perdaman's urea plant. And beyond that, yet another gas plant. Most people will associate the Burra Pub with gas and Woodside, which is a huge part of it. But what this is a collection of industrial projects that sit right next to Murujuga National Park and the aforementioned artworks. The industrial work done in the latter part of the previous century and the beginning of this one has seen the destruction of thousands of culturally important artworks already. Something Woodside CEO Meg O'Neill admitted that Woodside had done at a National Press Club address in 2023. This was a key trigger for the infamous failed action of Disrupt Burra Pub at her house, documented by the ABC's Four Corners program. The scale of all this truly can't be described by words. I once watched, despite the efforts of hundreds of activists, a forest be turned into a coal mine, and I cried at the wholesale destruction that the industrialisation of the landscape can bring. When I visited Murujuga, once again, tears fell down my face.
Early in the morning when the sun rises, everything comes to life in the land. Everything the light touches, it is brought to life.
It's a massive beast to tackle, which feels overwhelming because they're right on our doorstep. You know, you go to Dampier Beach and you look out in the day and you'll always see a brown smudge that's coming directly from the Burra. The flares that they have for the gas plants out there, when they are cleansing the lines, they typically do it at night time because the flare is bigger and people notice it and it burns black smoke and a lot of people will comment on it.
When I was camping on the beach at Cleaverville, about 20 k's from Karratha, I could see the flares at night and the black clouds that came from them.
I live in Dampier and you can actually hear it roaring at night time. I don't know how many kilometres as the crow flies I am from Dampier away from the gas plant, but I think it's about 8 or 11 kilometres and you can hear it roaring. It wakes you up at night. And people will comment on it, wow, the flare was bright last night, or there's a lot of black smoke coming off of it, but that's as far as it goes. So when you talk to people, particularly about using Houston's Cove as a great example, people go down there and have picnics. We have a stairway to the moon. They have little festivals down there. It's such a popular family spot. But when you talk to people about the water quality that they're letting their children now swim in, are you concerned that this plant's going to be built here? And people are kind of rather apathetic about it. You know, are you not concerned about additional processing of oil and gas for your air quality that you and your children breathe in? But it is just that total apathy, which is kind of frustrating. And I think it is because it's normalized, because it is on your doorstep. And if it hasn't killed me now, it's not going to kill me if we make it bigger.
I mean, one of the things that the PCN is looking to do is to have a campaign to call on the local government to implement real-time, publicly sourced air quality monitoring in Karratha and Dampier. It's one of the few places, if not the only place, in the Pilbara that doesn't have it, and we think that that's not necessarily coincidental. And so, again, we're tying it into, this is the air you're breathing. So there are folks here, as Rachel said, low socioeconomic folks, Indigenous people who can't just up and go, as people who are currently working in the industry potentially can. But in the present, in terms of a health concern, and in the longitudinal case, in terms of climate change, everyone is going to be affected by this. So we are looking for entryways to have that conversation, because as people say, I'm doing this for my kids. No one enjoys doing FIFO work, working 12 days, etc. It is because of the prospects of a better life. That needs to be the cornerstone of the conversations we have.
I'm recording this show camped next to a remote gorge about 175 kilometres east of Marble Bar, Australia's hottest town. this area and the wider Pilbara is set to feel the full impact of climate change. And it already is.
People are talking about it a lot. We had one of the driest wet seasons on record. There's plants dying. You drive 20 kilometres south of here and it should be green. We've come off the back of a wet season and it's brown out there. Indigenous groups are talking about it. There's an undercurrent of concern in some circles about the native species of plants and animals that we've got here. People talk about it all the time. They are noticing within a span of a few short years that there's absolute differences in our seasons. It's hotter longer, it's dry. We're already noticing it, and yeah, people are already talking about it.
I wondered if people were attributing those changes to climate change or other reasons.
Most people I've spoken to are, but you still get, and I think this is a bit about protecting their lifestyle. People are talking about it being a natural part of the planet's shift in cycles and epochs and eras and all that stuff. So people are talking about it being natural, trying to downplay it a lot. I have that conversation a lot with people.
And like where we are proximal to the ocean, like Bulgaria, which is the suburbs down the northeastern part of the town, is like below water level and it is next to the inlet. And there are houses and streets in Bulgaria that can't get insurance in their home at the present. And the hospital, the Karatha Hospital, which is still only a few years old, is at one of the lowest points in terms of meters above sea level in the whole town. I do believe that that was built, ironically, on the cognitive dissonance sort of fantasy that things can just continue as they are. And I do believe that when people see the water level creep over, suddenly, you know, their house, their boat, their caravan will mean far less to them. But obviously by that point, we don't want to get to that point because by that point the follow-on effects will be so significant.
I would argue their boat would mean more to them then, though.
Arguably.
I agree with Fiona that we're already feeling the effects. I think some of them are also that we had an incredibly hot summer. Not so much the one that, especially 2 years ago, when we kept going over 50 degrees multiple times. And some of the workers up here have guidelines where they're allowed to go home when it hits a certain degree. But a lot of them don't. I work in an outdoor job where I have to work through any heat. Another thing that's happening is the Harding Dam. The Water Corp has put out a statement recently saying that the water's not safe for human consumption and that's where we get half of our water from. So they've blocked that and we're just getting water from Millstream at the moment. And that has, since that's been built, that's dried up the Harding River, which used to run through Roeburn. So it's only something I've ever really heard Indigenous people talk about, but that used to be a flowing river, which was a huge source of culture and lifestyle, and that's totally dried up. And the other thing is that we're going to be experiencing less frequent but more intense cyclones. And the last cyclone Damien, when it hit, did a fair bit of damage up here, and everyone's kind of like tensed and waiting for the next one. But when it does hit, it's likely to be more severe than that was.
But it's not all doom and gloom in the red dirt northwest. The rising consciousness of the plight of the area has seen actions both here and abroad to not only protect the amazing culture of the area, but also to stop it becoming another cog in the climate destruction machine.
I would love to see more of it up here. It breaks my heart that we get more activism around the world about the projects that are happening here on the Burrup Hub, and we're not even a grain on the sand in the beach. Compared to what they do globally, we don't have anywhere near as much activism happening here or people participating, which I find kind of sad. But the flip side of that is it's now in the global eye. So the UNESCO World Heritage listing has brought it to the fore. Activist groups like Save Our Songlines have brought it to the fore in platforms. That means it is getting broader attention around the world. It is getting broader national attention. I wish we could have drummed that from here, but it feels great to see that other people are jumping on that, because to Chris's point earlier, we can talk about the local effects here. This is just where it's being drawn from the ground. The effects are going to be global, so there needs to be global outcry. We need to be driving more and more of this outcry from places where they're going to be heard, because the population of people up here is very tiny compared to Perth. So I think it's great, and I do a little jump inside whenever I see any of those activities going on. Who's gonna put up my fight, yeah. Fireproof. So I've been saving my pretty pennies up.
embrace the current day, cause yo, I'm rising from the ashes now. My whole being covered in flames, enlightened state, because I played the game right. The sunshine is coming through now, sure the change comes slow. Hey, yeah, I speed the process up. God bless a life who focused enough to overcome these social barriers. I break through, brother man, see, I make do. When it's painful, I feel the fire of Phoenix. I'm fireproof. And they try to provide us with a lie straight to my face, and got the audacity to walk away. Good Samaritan gone and left us on a plane to hell, dwelling as fringe dweller, storytelling. In my blood I feel the presence of 60,000 plus years my ancestors roamed this desert landscape, from the tropics up north to a snow-capped mountain peak. I'm mentally scarred from the bloodshed in the past, but I've been fighting fire with fire since the day I was born. We back burn. Money now, for the crooked smile, I slid out the window to my soul. Ain't showing nothing back, talking now, talking loud. I'm walking in, walking out, saying the same thing. So they should bring the change and show them how. Damned if I didn't, I'm not a victim, but I listen, knowledge up on the privilege. The intuition be the resistance out the flames. Impossible, success, improbable. The stats ain't meaning nothing, fighting like I'm saying something. Fireproof. See the pace, my number one principle, I've been patient. And I wait when the time corrects for the face up where I came from. I dream about, we sleep now, hush sweet child, but the storm clouds come sunshine. Walk proud through daylight and the dawn's upon us. And the horizon's brighter than our southern stars ever were. I'm reaching out from here, yo, I ain't serving, check it. Higher learn of work and take me where the church is. And crucify me on the cross if I ain't worth it, fam. We back, burn.
Jimbler there with Fireproof. And today we heard from Chris, Rachel and Fiona from the Pilbara Climate Network. A great trio I had the pleasure of chatting with when I visited Nyalumanura a few weeks ago. Please jump onto their Facebook and give them a follow via the link in the show notes. I love stories like theirs, and if you want to hear more like that, then please jump onto 3cr.org.au/earthmatters, all as one word, and check out some of our previous shows. Earth Matters would like to thank the Community Radio Network for taking this local story and making it national. If you have any feedback or show ideas, please shoot us an email at earthmatters3cr@gmail.com. I'm your host, Phil Evans, and I hope you can join us next week for another Earth Matters.